When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's be honest, there's 29 NBA teams and then there's a G League roster with a few stars.
They have a math problem offensively.
Saturdays are the most fun day of the week, and with that, you get the most fun pod right here on the Athletic NBA show. It's called the Saturday Slam and Jam. You'll hear me, Andrew Schlecht, and my co-host Alex Spears break down the past week of NBA basketball, bring on a smart beat writer to give you the lowdown on their team, and then we have a trivia game, Andrew versus the Beat, where I just try not to humiliate myself. So when you're raking your leaves, brewing your coffee, or just taking care of stuff around the house, listen to Saturday Slam and Jam right here on the Athletic NBA show.
Yeah, I think we're going to close on that one. I mean, we got to close on a... I mean, if Coach Thorpe has given us a compliment...
I want to plug.
What do you got, Mo?
I want to plug.
Please plug it.
Besides plugging my One Mo Thing videos, I am doing a Twitch stream Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, where literally I just run through basketball games. I pick two games. I pick a game. I literally just make edits. I'm back to my video coordinator days. My hair's already disheveled at this point. Like, it's we're back at this whole level, making edits and running through basketball stuff. And, you know, come through on Twitch. It's the same as my Twitter handle. You'll find it. And it's just fun. I'm just talking basketball, running through examples and things like that. So think of it as a long One Mo Thing. So come through if you guys like.
Twitch stream Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time.
Twitch stream Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. Besides plugging my One Mo Thing videos.
Right in your podcast face.
Do you want to talk about it?
Well, it's just there's this contract we're trying to locate.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA show
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
We're the group that works like they do, the group that embraces some of our mantras. We talk about getting better every day. We talk about playing together. When you do those things, you end up on a stage like this. For our city of Milwaukee, NBA champions. Yeah. It's big time.
This is Nerder, She Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Hartman.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA show. It's Friday and it's Nerder, She Wrote. That music is recognizable at this point because they changed the theme song. I'm Dave Dufour, joined as I am every single week by Seth and Mo, and as I used to be by my coach, Coach Thorpe, and we're starting with Coach Thorpe. What's up, Coach? No tank top. We already hit you on it. No tank top because it's already cold in, or at least colder in Florida. But welcome back.
Thank you. No, that's not why it's no tank top. My wife forbade me a while ago from anything in public. I'm working out. That's it. I cannot embarrass the family anymore.
Now, I said that all year we're going to start with our favorite things. I'm going to start with my favorite thing, guys, and it is the competition committee coming out, doubling down, and saying, you don't like it? I don't care. You don't love it? You better learn to deal with it, because the new rules and the new style of play are here to stay, and I will tell you guys this. I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been paying attention, and to the eye test, it does seem like the referees were wild the first 10 days, and they're starting to rein it back in. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw Jimmy Butler had 17 free throws the other night. Luka had 12, I think. And I felt like they were all like, I would have given those free throws. I think that they're settling into a nice groove. The game is awesome. And I'm just really pumped that these guys did not get pushed over by players complaining. The players had to go ahead and start complaining about the ball. That's basically the same ball. It's great.
I think this is, we normally see something like this every year. There's the, I wrote about this on Wednesday at The Athletic. There's, you know, normally the points of emphasis, points of education. You know, we're really going to crack down on this. Usually the thing they're cracking down on is, okay, we're going to call travels. We're going to call moving screens. We're going to call 3 seconds. So there's more calls. And this is the first time I can remember where it's like, okay, we're cracking down and not calling things. And so even though that means that all, like, there's been far fewer free throws than, you know, we normally see. Usually the start of the season is when we see the most free throws. That's still kind of a piece with, as you say, the refs kind of reeling back in a little bit, and probably the players having adjusted too. Like, you, it did not take long for you could to see guys like pump fake, get a guy up in the air, but not really jumping to him. And like, you could almost see the thought bubble of his head. I'm going to jump. I can't jump into him, and then pass and do something else. So it didn't take players that long to start learning. And yeah, there were some, there's some pretty obvious like uncalled fouls that were fouls. And now maybe we're getting a better balance to that. But, you know, I agree with you, Dave, that just listen, saying no, tough shit, play basketball.
I would rather an innocent man go free, or, you know, like, let's not jail innocent people, right? A guilty man going free. So don't call the foul. I'd rather fewer fouls get called. Call no fouls. Call your own.
I just wanted to make
I know. I totally butchered that. I don't care. I butchered it. I walked 4 miles before we're doing this show, so I'm a little sweaty. But I do think that the style of play is just so much more. It's more enjoyable. I can sit down and watch a game. I don't feel like I'm watching commercials or replay or the fan cam or whatever the hell else they're trying to distract me with. It's not the ball moving up and down the court. And, you know, I like that they're coming out and saying, hey, we got to fix the take foul. That's great. And they're going to do it next summer, I'm sure. The solution already exists. They're doing it in the G League. They're doing it in FIBA. Like, they know how to fix it. I do wish that they would allow themselves to just change the rule now. But, you know, we got to wait.
All-star break, maybe do have the all-star break. I don't know about you guys, but when I was a young coach growing up, I worked 10 weeks of camp every summer. I say goodbye to my then girlfriend, now wife, and just work camps. And with some exceptions where they brought in, we had the ACC school of officials that would work the 5-star camps. And that was amazing because it was ref camp and the ACC officials were supervising the referees, many of which were on the track to being college referees themselves. That was the glory days. The rest of the time we did it all day. If you weren't running a station or coaching your team, you refed. So I'm guessing I refed about 300,000 games. And one of my rules was, I'm not rewarding a bullshit play on the offense. I'm not rewarding it. You played just to draw a little bit of contact. I'm not calling that because as I looked at it, and this is not the way the NBA should be built, I was just rewarding a bad habit for the offensive player. And I was in, these were high school kids. I wanted the guys to develop more intelligently than it would otherwise. And honestly, I kind of like that in the NBA too. It has to have an impact on a play that might score. And I'll say this, my first rule of defense, Thorpe's rule number one, do not foul. Sure. With some time and score context, do not foul. Because, and you guys know this very well, Seth, the math guy really knows it well. Guys tend to miss really well-contested shots from anywhere on the court. I'm telling you, when I first teach NBA players this, and they just wall up, and they think they're dead to rights, whereas they've always fouled in the past, and the 7-foot guy misses the 3-footer. And after a week, they call me like, I can't believe they're missing these. I'm like, dude, they were missing before you were alive. Nothing's changed.
Right.
Just don't foul them. That's what they need. So I think to Seth's point, there is an adjustment on both ends. And to your point, Dave, I've really enjoyed the hell out of these games. I just think it's a cleaner game. There's a fine line. We don't want 70s, 80s, 90s bully ball. I don't want the New York Mets-style baseball where there's fights all the time. That sucks. This is not wrestling. This is professional basketball. So we got to walk that line, and let's make sure we do. Let's make sure we call the fouls we're supposed to call. But if you come up with some bullshit and you get touched, we ain't giving you that call. Quit doing the bullshit.
I think the most important thing is we've given defenses a chance.
Like, that's just the big thing. Like, at the end of the day, you know, the past couple of years, it's literally just been like, hey, all offense. And the game literally just turned into it. As much as I hate the cliche,
pinball. It turned into pinball.
Not even that. It literally did just become make or miss league, in the sense of all that mattered was, did you make shots or miss shots? Didn't matter how you defended. And so I think it's become a lot, just giving the defense a chance has changed the games in themselves, has made them more competitive. We've had a lot, I don't know the numbers, this is just off eye tests and stuff, but a lot closer games, you know, in the first couple of weeks of the season than I can remember. And maybe that's just because I do a lot more of the breakdowns with those, but it's just something where I'm like, this is more fun and more enjoyable across.
And this is where the shooting percentages being down is a multifaceted problem. Okay. Defenses are able to defend better. And I'm willing to even entertain the idea that guys are getting used to a new ball. Enough people are saying it. I don't want to just throw it out offhand or be dismissive. I mean, but I want to be in my heart. I'm not going to be.
Do you have a Wilson ball?
I don't. No, Wilson didn't send us one.
Before the show, for no reason at all, I was just cleaning out my trunk, and I do have some of the new Wilsons, and I have some regular old NBA balls, and we trained with them all summer. And it's a lot more similar than the sticky ball that Steve Nash hated.
Yeah.
That was my small-handed guys loved that old sticky ball.
No. I have small hands, and that, like, the thing that Steve Nash was complaining about, like, one of my regular runs at the time used that ball, and like, if the ball got a little bit wet, it got so tacky that the skin on my fingertips like split open. And so it's like, it's imagine getting like every jump shot release. Imagine like if you were getting your hair pulled, except it was on your fingertip every time you took a jump shot.
It's like Spider-Man shooting a ball.
That feels a Squid Game type thing. That feels like something we'll see in season 2.
I love that ball. I'm just telling you, but this ball is a lot more like it. It's not a clone. Like, you could feel it in my hands. I just did it, you know, 20 minutes ago. But I don't think that's a great excuse. I think what you said initially.
I think it's defense. And honestly, I will say this. I think fatigue is playing a factor, too, because there's not as much stoppages. I think these guys are just tired. You can see. I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it on defensive glass. I'm seeing opportunities for teams to crash the offensive boards. I think we're gonna wind up. If they stay on their ground, please don't change. We are going to wind up with a sport that is actually basketball where, hey, you know what? Maybe we're going to crash the glass in this game because we've got a little bit of a size advantage instead of, now every team in the league does the same thing. Put the shot up. We're all Doc Rivers. We're just going to get back on defense. I think that things are going to change because of the fatigue factor, because of the lack of foul calls, and teams are going to have to be smarter. We're going to see more 11, 12, 13-man rotations this year than I think ever before.
And more athletes can play too, because they can use that athleticism and physicalness to make a difference on the court.
I wanted to push a little bit on the offensive rebound stuff, just because I think that was coming.
It may be.
Regardless. I felt like this was the slow trend coming back that was, you know, like it swung so far against crashing the boards. And then you saw kind of teams having success with that in the playoffs and being a copycat league. Cause I was going to bring this up to you guys.
Yeah.
You know, down the road with more stats.
Wait, Mo, have you listened to Ryan Pinone give his lecture and clinics on this?
I have not.
You guys know who Ryan is?
I mean, I know Ryan. Yeah.
He's the head G League coach of the Pelicans. He was my assistant for 14, 15 years. He would coach overseas all over the world. His story is quite incredible. And he coached with a guy, very, very famous guy, that sent 5 guys to the glass every offensive possession. And they, I mean, broke all sorts of records and offensive rebounds, did not get in transition, because if you didn't go get a rebound, you just screened in your opponent. So he couldn't race out.
Right.
And he has given a ton of clinics. And I'm telling you, he has spent a lot of time talking to NBA coaches about this exact thing. Mo's exactly right. This was already coming because of people like Ryan, who brought it from Europe to the NBA. It wasn't the other way around. It's one of the many things we've taken from Europe intelligently. And so, but to the point about the refereeing, well, if they're calling every touch, you can't take advantage of it nearly as much if you're a big physical beast of an athlete. And now we have that, which is great. It's not just skill guys anymore. Montrez is having a resurgence in part because he just out animals everybody. Right? This is his talent, which is nothing wrong with that. He fucking competes. like it's a postseason game. Ironically, you can't play him in the postseason. That's all I'm sure. But he fucking works. It matters to him.
He does.
And I love that. I love that he can take advantage of that.
I don't want to get us sidetracked on Trez Harrell, but his defense has been better this year. And a lot of that, I think, is because he's allowed to use his body more. And this is good, man. It's good for the game. It's good for the league. Okay. Enough of my favorite thing. Anybody want to go next?
It's what today is the fifth. So 11 days from now, my book comes out. That's my favorite thing.
And that's my favorite.
It's going to continue to be my favorite thing for the next 11 days. So that's
no longer than that. Longer than the next 11 days. You need to get on Amazon Prime right now.
That's right.
Pre-order the book, Mid-Range Theory. Jump on it right now. We need to get this on all the bestseller lists.
Actually,
all
yes.
of that stuff.
Let's make this book number one. When it comes out, I want Seth's book, The Mid-Range Theory, to be number one bestseller, at least in basketball. I don't know if that's a subcategory. But how about sports?
For a day or two, number one basketball book, number one coaching book. It didn't last long.
Yeah. Basketball is jazz, and the mid-range is alive.
I love
that. That's the next book. That's Coach Thorpe and Seth Partnow's next collaboration.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I've also had a lot of great three-point shooters. We better have a counter when they take it away. You can shot fake side dribble three, mm-hmm. but not against a good defender. Like Damian Lillard learned last night against Jared Allen. You got the right guy on you. You can shot fake side dribble all you want. You can't get it off. You better be able to attack. Now, he was down three with seconds to go. But yeah, I call it the second box. So from 15 feet to 8 feet in the paint, that's my second box. Everything we do is basically get in the second box and read what's going on. So I can't wait to read your book.
Okay. Coach, what's your favorite thing from the past week?
I'm going to go with the Warriors defense. Last year, they finished top two or three, depending on who you looked at. You would never think that. I know they have Draymond Green, but it's not like they have a bunch of good defenders in theory, right? And scheme matters. Coaching matters. Strategy matters. Execution matters. I've been saying it since I first joined ESPN. It's a coach's league. It's not just a player's league. And I thought Steve Kerr proved me right last year. He's proven me right a lot of times, to be honest with you. But they're doing it again. And look at their team. I mean, I think Draymond leads their team in block shots with one, but they actually are decent in shot blocks. I think Jordan Poole might be their top steals leader, but none of those guys are built. There's no Davion Mitchells as rookies on ball nightmares, but they're one of the tops in steals. I think they're four or five in steals created. But more than anything, they might be helped. They played a terrible schedule. And guys, teams are shooting terribly against them. That may not be because of what they're doing. They're giving up a ton of threes, but they're not making a ton. I think that'll probably even out some. But they are defending. They're executing their well-thought-out strategy and making you beat them in ways that they're dictating more often than not, which is, to me, the whole name of the game on defense, is make you do stuff you're not great at. Maybe you haven't practiced it much. And I think they're doing it better than anyone, given their roster.
Did you guys catch Gary Payton? I mean, good Lord. Does he have a little bit of Bruce Brown potential for this
Bruce
team?
Bruce Brown or Bruce Bowen?
Bruce Brown. Like, could he be like the guard who's offensively the big for them?
I don't think he has quite the touch and feel. I think he's a better athlete and probably a better like a better perimeter defender, but I don't think I don't think he's ever going to be able to make.
Bruce's got that little floater.
Yeah. And also just kind of the ability to like play in the short role in kind of a way like that like a good power forward could. And I don't think Peyton has that.
But defensively, he might be the guy that they can throw onto guards and wings, smaller wings, but guards to be like their point of attack guy in crunch time when they need it.
The poor man's Alex Caruso.
But it gets tougher with Draymond not being able to shoot, right? You can survive with one bad shooter on the court. At end of games, if you're going to be playing Draymond and it's a, you know, maybe Iguodala, maybe not, like whatever, but like just the number of shooters you have on the court and non-shooters, once you start getting to two or three, it becomes a problem. And I know the importance of it defensively, obviously, it's just a question of where you're at and what you're trying to do in those crunch time minutes if you're trying to come back from behind or whatnot. It just gets tougher in that sense. They've been playing great defensively. I want to see if it sustains, because I think that's the other thing that I have a question about, because they still don't have a ton of great defenders.
They did it last year. They were top three or top four last year in defense.
Yeah, but a lot of it also happened once, you know, with Wiseman out and things like that. Once Clay comes back again and you're trying to get him back in the fold, he's not going to be moving as well as he did before. So it's going to, there's going to be a drop at some point with some of that. So let's see if it can kind of continue with everything that they're doing along those lines. And once they get those guys back, I love what they're doing. They're fun to watch. I'm still a little bit skeptical.
Can they just like not play?
Can they play someone?
Is it going to be tenable? No. Is it going to be tenable for them to just not play Wiseman? Just because he was.
Yeah, they have to.
Yeah. Just from an organizational standpoint, you can't just write off the second pick right out of the gate in your second year.
Looney's a very, very, very high level space defender that can guard wings. Wiseman can't do either. Probably for at least a year or two.
I'm not expecting a ton of burn for Wiseman. I'm thinking like he's going to get some eight to 10, maybe 12 minutes, and he'll get a bunch of garbage time. Like,
yeah, but that, if you talk about a team's defense, those 8 to 10, 12 minutes, you give up, you know, 23 points in 10 minutes, that's going to chip away at your defensive overall.
But he also needs to get more, though. Like if you're – you've invested in this guy as your second pick in his second year, a guy who also hasn't played a lot of basketball over the years. We know it. Like if you're just going to play him 8 to 10 minutes, honestly, just take him to the G League. Just take the bite, the bad bullet in the sense of the press and all the organizational crap you're going to get for that. But then you got to get him minutes where he's going to send him to the G League, send him to Santa Cruz, get him 30 minutes a night. Like that's just to get him up there.
You guys got anything else or do you want to talk about the rookie class?
I have one thing. I am loving what Kyle Lowry is doing for the Miami Heat's offense. They're playing at a faster pace than they normally do. Not the fastest pace in the NBA or anything like that, but faster than the way the Heat have normally played in years past. And it's all starting with he's getting two or three kick ahead buckets for those guys where he gets a rebound and kicks it ahead. And it's usually Jimmy Butler running down the court after contesting a three, and they're just getting easy buckets and something like just three or four easy layups a game they're getting off of those things goes so far into just making your team so much better and building a lead. And you don't have to work as hard.
Rule of thumb that this is bring up. Someone brought it up on Twitter the other day. Rule of thumb, and I've studied this a number of different ways, is every second earlier you get into your offense is worth a point of offensive rating. And it's not just the, okay, we get some layups out of it, but you give yourself chances to get good early looks. You give yourself chances for a defender to fall asleep. You give yourself chances to get into some continuity and get to the, you know, the second, third side of an action to get to, you know, to get into your third, make the same defender defend the third different action on a play. Like, okay, he defended it twice and now his head's spinning and you hit him at the third thing and you get an open shot. And you give yourself time to do that when you get your first thing going with like 15, 16 on the clock instead of, you know, running it all the way down to 11 and then you're one action playing against the clock.
Completely agree. I've been writing about this for a long time. Yeah.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
And I mean, look, to me, like one of the big difference makers, if you're a point guard, is to be in the habit of looking up. You know what I mean? Like it's such a funny thing to say, but looking up, I mean, you know, you think about when Lonzo was coming into the league and how much we all just were gushing about his head-to-head passes and the other guys. I mean, LeBron obviously has done that his whole career. And he's just such a, it's low-hanging fruit. And Kyle has been able to come in there and now those guys are looking for it. I mean, I even said this the other day. I was like, I'm actually really glad that I was so wrong about their offense. I hope this holds up because we knew the defense was going to be a motherfucker. Like we knew that. But I didn't know that they were going to have an offense with, you know, this sort of these sorts of options. I mean, it helps that Tyler Hero looks better. Jimmy looks really, really good compared to how he looked for parts of last season. Yeah, man, I might have been, I don't know about way off on Miami. We'll see. But I may have been lower on them than I definitely should have. And a lot of it is just these little changes. Go ahead.
No team benefits from the new rule calls and the referees in Miami Heat.
Foul early and often.
Yeah. Also, like the worry about the Heat was sustainability because they like, you know, the worry is basically can they get to May with Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler at full health? And we're recording this on November 4th. It's just some
pump the breaks.
Yeah, there's a lot that can happen between now and then. So that's like it's a little too early to well, the thing that we thought was going to be a problem isn't a problem.
We got to see more of it. Yes, I agree. All right, guys, I wanted to talk about the rookies. This rookie class is fun and good. And as of like right now, I mean, you guys have seen Cade. He's played two games as of today. And this is the guy that I think everyone was waiting to see. And, man, I haven't thought about Cade Cunningham outside of those two games since the season started because Evan Mobley looks so good and Jalen Green looks so good and Scotty Barnes looks so good. And, I mean, is there a bad rookie that's getting minutes?
Yes.
I mean,
oh, yeah. Jalen Green's not good.
Well, no, he's not good, but he's got some.
Entertaining.
He's doing some. There you go. Perfect. There you go. He's entertaining. There you go.
I want to talk about Chris Duarte.
Oh, perfect. Yes. Perfect.
I feel like he's going to engender a lot of draft mistakes in the future because the kind of you draft an older guy, he's ready to step in. Generally speaking, no, they're not. They still have to learn how to play NBA basketball, but he's like stepped in and been seamlessly been a perfectly serviceable NBA wing from day one, basically. And that is unusual. But it's going to convince a lot of people. See, we can take the old guy and it'll be fine.
A really good 24-year-old Cam Johnson too. You can't take them because they dominated college players because they beat them up.
Right.
Duarte didn't beat anybody. I mean, neither did Cam Johnson at North Carolina. So you have to be smart about that. But I mean, I had Barnes and Mobley 1 and 2 in my draft. I had Mobley 1, Barnes 2 in terms of prospects. But a guy that I missed on, and I'm happy to say it, I watched a ton of tape on Franz Wagner. I tend to like really physical, incredibly intense competitors. And I'm biased. I realize that now. And he did not show that on tape. I watched a lot of tape on him. And I wanted to like him. I watched him kick my son's team's ass, Florida State, in the Sweet 16. I'm like, I'm going to love this guy. But when I broke it down, I just saw so many plays where I thought, why did he pull up on that? Why didn't he go this? I just thought he was lacking something. He is not soft. And he's not one of the best four or five players. I've talked to the Magic coaches. They're thrilled with them. But I had Barnes and Mobley at the top two because the game makes sense to them. When Seth just talked about learning how to play, and believe me, they need to learn how to play. But to me, it's easier to teach skills than it is teaching guys how to play because their ego gets in the way too often. Maybe Jalen Green figures it out, maybe, but he's all about the electricity, which he's got a lot of. Let's be fair. Is he really going to be willing to tone it down and play jazz? It took Zach LaVine a long time to figure it out. And he's still, I think he's figured it out.
He's got some bandmates now. That helps.
I fell in love with Zach this summer with Team USA, but it took a while. And I don't know if Jalen's going to figure it out or not. I think Barnes and Mobley just have to keep getting skilled and, in Mobley's case, stronger. Those guys really know how to play. And long and tall, athletic, their position. They play at a great pace. You don't see that with rookies.
The thing you said about Jalen Green, I thought that was a great point. When the highest profile game at Summer League was Pistons-Rockets, where, you know, Cade against, you know, one against two. And just the difference between the two of them, what the first thing they did when they caught the ball. First thing Cade did was like, you know, there's the expression, the ball has energy. Like you catch a swing pass from your right side, your instant motion is, I'm going to reverse it, keep going to the left because the ball kind of wants to move that way. And that every time Cade is like doing that, and every time Jalen Green got the ball, pounding it right away, looking to see like what, like, and just, you know, again, the physical talent is there, whether that can be harnessed into something productive rather than something flashy is going to be the question.
While he's still on the Rockets.
Right.
And a lot of these guys like Zach end up going somewhere else. Well, what was the point of the draft? It might take 5 years. We'll see. He's got a lot to learn. And there's a lot of young guys, to your point, Dave, like there's a lot of young guys trying to learn the game with him. They are not a fun team to watch.
I'll just say one thing. I do enjoy watching Alperen Şengün for the Rockets. And this is like a little bit of a deep cut, but just, I like the idea of giving it to him on the elbow, giving it to him at the top of the 3-point line and let him kind of be a little bit of a playmaker. Like he's got good passing instincts and that's something like you can't teach that. Like you can try, you guys can get better as playmakers and things like that, but he has a good kind of like the offense moves a little bit better, and it's Houston. So the offense isn't very good to begin with, but it moves a touch better when Şengün's in the game with that stuff and just kind of finding the flow. He's a little bit the way Seth was describing Cunningham, like he's looking to move the ball next. And unfortunately it lands into a play stopper, be it Jalen Green or Kevin Porter Jr. or something like that. But I like watching him do that. He has ways to go defensively, but as most rookies do. But like I've been impressed with him on that side of the ball just a little bit with the passing.
You know, he had DeAndre Jordan in isolation on the wing the other day in that game and just took him to the rack. Like, I mean, it was a turnstile, which, okay, it's DeAndre Jordan, you know.
You see point guards the same way.
Josh Giddey. I mean, he's good. Yeah, he's good. He's big. This whole class is something. And Coach, look, you're a little bit more plugged in on the development side than we are. Like, is there a change in the last few years? Because it just seems like these guys are, I'm not going to say ready to play, because that's not fair to anybody. But they show these, it just feels like they're more mature players coming in than they were 5 years ago, even.
Well, I'll say this, that in them growing up now, I just went through this with my son's only a sophomore in college now. So I went through the whole AAU thing and saw a lot of these talented players. There is a slow matriculation towards adopting. My son's been running NBA offenses since he was in sixth grade. And yes, we saw some AAU teams that just acted like they all had James Harden on their team from the Rockets. But we also saw more teams that ran the kind of stuff, follow your pass, set the veer screen, set the go screen, you know, make sure you time your cuts up, those kinds of things. Play with pace with everyone, not just the one guy pushing it, but all five guys racing, or at least four racing. I also think that it's a little fool's gold. I think we get caught up in looking at their numbers, look at their advanced metrics. They tend to suck. Most guys, that's why Barnes and Mobley are kind of so surprising, and Duarte, is they don't suck. Green, last I looked at Green, and I know it's early to look at offensive, you know, net rating, but it was minus 18. Now, their team is bad, but he's really bad. He's just flashy and very exciting, but also he made one, I guess, step back three against Davis, everyone talked about. But when the game mattered, well, I guess the game mattered later too, early in the game, he was trying to take Davis one-on-one, and I'm watching live thinking, what are you doing? Like, that's Anthony Davis. He ends up after, you know, 84 dribbles, taking a, you know, contested shot. Davis, of course, blocks it. Like, at least know who you're going up against. Attack Reeves, maybe, not Davis.
Oh, I don't hate that, Coach. I like it. He can take anybody.
Yeah, you're going to learn. I would say this. When Kevin Durant was a rookie for Seattle, he was horrible. In year four was the first time they were better when he was on the court than off. They were worse for three straight years. And I always felt like his rookie year, PJ Carlissimo, I think he felt like if I just let this kid eat all the candy in the candy store, he'll get so sick of freaking candy that he'll stop eating it. And now Durant is one of the most genius offensive players of all time, considering he's unguardable. But he also has amazing shot selection for a guy that almost can't take a bad shot. He's so disciplined. I think he learned that. So to your point, I get it. But there's not a lot of KDs out there, and none of them are at 7 feet.
Right.
So I'd like to see a little more discipline from Jalen Green and all the rookies.
To Coach's point, generally speaking, there's about one rookie a year who is a genuinely positive contributor, like to a decent team. Like, not a guy. There's more than that who are not total anchors when they're on the floor, but an actual, like, this guy is a good NBA player. There's usually only about one or two per year on a team that is kind of a playoff level team. And so far this year, again, it's very early. But the interesting thing is, to the extent we have kind of advanced stuff we can look at, there's been four or five guys who have been kind of, you know, we've talked about Duarte. We talked about Scotty Barnes. Evan Mobley has been the best player on the Cavs. I think it's fair to say Davion Mitchell probably has gotten a little overhyped, just because he's had a couple of good offensive games, but he's like, he can do some things. So
I mean, Trey Murphy, Franz Wagner.
I'm talking about decent, I mean, or better teams. So the Magic don't really qualify right
now. Yeah, not on bad teams. Yeah. The Pacers look rough. I'm glad that you brought up Davion Mitchell, because Davion Mitchell and Evan Mobley to me are super unique, because, I mean, and not so much on the offensive end for Mobley or for Davion Mitchell, but Mobley's been good on both ends. But for those guys to be, I mean, I don't, where do you even place those guys as far as defender, like at their position? I mean, Davion Mitchell is already really damn good, like among point of attack.
Mitchell's good on the ball. He's right. Little. Barnes is a hell of a defensive player right now.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
had a couple of moments where he's got a little excited like a puppy and try to get a steal when he shouldn't. But his length, he's tallying up, making guys miss like he's 25 years old, and he gets it that they normally miss those shots. And then he can rebound and run. He's going to be an elite. He and Mobley both are going to be spectacular defensive players, which is why I rate him 1 and 2. As I told Chad Ford, defense is 50% of the game. We keep forgetting that. Coaches don't, but the rest of us do. It's a huge aspect. It's half the game. And if you can be Damian Lillard and be one of the greatest offensive players ever, then your team can still be very, very good, even though you suck on defense. But who does that?
Right.
Give me a guy that can guard and not just on the ball, but off the ball, which is really where the whole game is. On the ball is super important. Off the ball is equally as important. So Mitchell's going to have his issues because he's tiny. But he'll be a bulldog on the ball, and that's great. There's a role for that for sure.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Now that's
That's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Have you felt the same way, Mo? I mean, like Mobley, just I've been astounded watching him play defense. His feel is fantastic.
Yeah, no, that's what happens when you go to the University of Southern California here and play for the Trojans.
Here we go. Here we go. Listen, yeah. See, I think those Florida State guys know what to do.
You guys taught him a lot. He was terrible before he got to USC. You almost didn't give him a scholarship, I heard.
Well, you know, he had to hit our standards. No, but like all kidding aside, like Mobley's IQ is on a level like defensively very high. Like just seeing the attempts he's trying and stuff. And it's like Coach said, and I loved he said it. It's these guys are like puppies. They still get very excited and stuff, and they're gonna be bad games. They're gonna have nights where you're defensively, you're like, where are you at? But also, you know, just his instincts. Again, back to like I'm fascinated by these dudes being able to pass. Like some of the reads he makes on the offensive end and some of the passes in the sense that lead to just fouls, and they're simple stuff. It's making a good high low pass, you know, which oddly enough is disappearing in the NBA game because we don't post as much, but just seeing that stuff and creating opportunities for teammates. Everything about Mobley's game I love. I'm excited to watch him kind of continue to grow. Obviously he's got to get a little stronger and especially in the base area, but ultimately like just on both ends of the court, just the IQ is so high. I'm confident he's going to be a good basketball player.
The mid-range theory.
When you get paid a bunch of money to write a second book, it needs to be The Art of Passing, because I think it's by far the most underrated aspect of our game. You show me a player and or a team that delivers on time, accurate. That's the big thing for me. I used to like the term hyper-accurate. Show me the guy that delivers the hyper-accurate pass at the right time, and he's leading guys to buckets. Whereas if you watch these games, guys are catching all over the place, and these amazing players still score some. They'll score a lot more if you lead them to the bucket. I don't just mean catch and shoot threes from the chest. I'm talking about in transition, or when Mo talked about high-low, don't throw it to where he is. He's sealing a guy. Lead him so he can just hold it to the end, catch and score. Those passers are huge difference makers to a team, and I don't think it's seen and valued nearly enough.
We've lost the post-entry pass. Just the ability of, okay, this is a bad angle. Let me take one dribble over and throw the pass. Like, how many times have you guys seen a game where somebody's trying to post up and they literally just throw the worst pass?
You're giving me flashbacks to Philly in the playoffs.
No, I mean, that's exactly who we're always thinking for the most part. But it's just like, I've done breakdowns on my Twitch stream where I'm like, seriously, guys, just one more dribble over and that's a dunk. Instead, you tried to make the pass from this angle and it's a turnover. It's just that simple.
See, this is the thing that makes Jokic so special, right? Is that Jokic is actually, he's not only leading those guys, passing them open. I think Jokic takes those guys places they don't know they need to go.
For sure.
Right? Like, there are times where you will watch a guy who is clearly slowing down to stop his cut, and Jokic is going to just throw the pass where it needs to go. And that's why that's why that offense is able to do what it's able to do, even when they're hurting and missing guards and stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, I'd love to read that book, Seth.
November 16th. Speaking of Jokic, just I think he's probably made the pass of the season, and it was from second game of the season or so. If you haven't seen the clip, you should find it. He basically throws like almost a blind highlight pass that's on a line that like buzzes the eyebrows of a defender before like hitting Michael Porter Jr. in the corner. And like the sound the crowd makes as this ball is in the air is just like, ooh, cause it's just, there's nothing there. There's no opening. It was a knuckle that hits Michael Porter Jr. in the chest. And he's so surprised by it that he actually hesitates before shooting, which, you know,
never does.
In the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen a lot of these plays where guy drives. Normally it's over, I call it a straight line drive over the block, but tend to be a little bit farther to the right or left. So a little bit underneath the block area, more towards the baseline. He's put in jail by the big or the bigs or his own guy who's tall. And he kind of flows underneath the rim and then fires some kind of pass out either to the opposite elbow. Last night I saw a couple guys back to the top. We see this every game now. This, I don't remember ever, Magic Johnson is the best passer of all time in my mind. I don't ever remember him doing that. If he did, it was once. This is every night, every quarter, teams are doing this. Am I wrong? Am I not remembering things and you do remember it?
I don't remember this either. It's like the inside out game is now from penetration, not from post entry. Right. And I think this start, I mean, if you wanted to follow the evolution, and I'm just off the top of my head kind of riffing, but the Steve Nash underneath dribble is probably the thing that got us from the post entry kickout to where we are now, where it's this dribble drive kickout. But the three ball being so important, and you guys, Mo and Seth, I mean, you guys work for teams, so you probably know this stuff better than I do for sure. But it feels like that pass just didn't exist before because there wasn't a guy there.
Well, there's another thing that's going on here too, and I got to give Mo a shout out for one more thing this week.
You talked about
baseline drive, baseline drift. That's like basic, you know, NBA spacing. If a guy's driving baseline and you're on the opposite wing, you space to the corner. Defenses know that now, so they're shifting down. So the player now takes that one more dribble in, and now there's that kind of that inside angle to throw the pass you're talking about, where, you know, that like the guy who is sprinting, you're almost throwing this bullet pass behind the guy who's sprinting to cover the corner, and that's the one that hits the guy in like the opposite slot that you're talking about.
But remember this too: we were all taught, again, I was playing basketball late 70s and early 80s in high school. You didn't leave your feet to make a pass. That was the rule. I don't get that. Because you couldn't do any of these things if you followed that rule.
Tell me the last time an NBA player threw a pass without jumping. I can't think of one off the top of my head. I mean, these guys leave their feet and they make the decision in the midair. And I wonder if that's going to come down with the whistles, because that's part of this, right? Is those guys trying to get up to get the whistle. Like, they've been doing that whistle training. Coach, I know you know. That's going away. Something I noticed was a little bit more turnovers on these, jump in the air and look for somebody to pass to.
There's a big difference though. And I think what it is there are guys who jump with a plan and there are guys who jump cause they're in trouble. And the ones who jump into trouble are the ones that tend to turn the ball over, tend to find a tough instance. At least even when you're jumping, you have an idea of like where I'm going with it. And the only way I can make this pass is if I jump. And Steph totally stole my line there on what Coach Thorpe was saying, because it's a definite direct correlation. As defenses have gotten smarter, the offense has evolved. It's the way our favorite character from Jurassic Park, Jeff Goldblum, has said, you know, Mother Nature always finds a way. It was just evolution.
Basketball finds
a way. Just talking about this, you know who the first player I can really remember doing this a lot was? Is Manu. Like, you can just see him like driving left and like hanging out of bounds to create an angle either to the corner or to the opposite slot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's the hammer just up top, right? It's the same exact mechanics, I would imagine. Any parting shots as we go?
I got one.
Perfect.
I just want to say thank you to you guys. You guys really honor the game in all the best ways. And I think there's a good amount of us that care about the game and not just our reporters, but our people who actually coached and taught or analyzed it. And we need to keep fighting the good fight, because my children's generation needs to learn from guys like you and read guys like you and women like you. We need to get more women doing it too. So I just want to say thank you for being who you are.
Thank you, Coach.
I don't know how to respond, but thank you.
Yeah, I think we're going to close on that one. I mean, we got to close on a. I mean, if Coach Thorpe has given us a compliment,
I want to plug.
What do you got?
I want to plug just along those lines. I'm
do it.
Besides plugging my One Mo Thing videos, I am doing a Twitch stream Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific times, where literally I just run through basketball games. I pick two games. I pick a game. I literally just make edits. I'm back to my video coordinator days. That's my hair's already disheveled at this point. Like it's we're back at this whole level, making edits and running through basketball stuff. And, you know, come through on Twitch. It's the same as my Twitter handle. You'll find it. And it's just fun. Just talking basketball, running through examples and things like that. So think of it as a long One Mo Thing. So come through if you guys like.
The Twitch streams have been awesome, Mo. And the One Mo thing, like, it's funny because I've told Mo to, hey, let me know when the One Mo thing comes out. And then I just happened to see it. And I was just watching it the other day. Like, it just was on my feed. And I was like, oh, yeah, this I should share this. This is really good. Seth, you got anything?
Pre-order? November 16th. Pre-order. That's mid-range right. Theory.
Mid-range theory. Shout it out.
There's actually, if you, you can actually, I discovered today that if you go on Amazon and you want like a preview of it, the forward that Tim Bontemps was kind enough to write, and the first chapter is kind of available. I think part of the first chapter is available if you want to get just a taste of what the book's about. And I think that in the next couple of weeks, I think there'll be an excerpt or two showing up on The Athletic and maybe one more place.
Make sure you contact Hoops Hype. They'll do one too.
There you go. We'll make sure that happens. Okay, Coach, thanks for hanging out. Hopefully it's not as long as we just had between appearances, and we can make this happen a little bit more regularly. For Seth and for Mo, I'm Dave. We'll be back next week on the Athletic NBA Show.